I'd like to speak by the Lord's help in the 12th chapter of the book of Matthew. I'm cast in my mind to remember if I have ever heard a teaching on a topic that we have this evening, and I can't remember that I ever have, just directly for a whole message. But it's an important subject. I'd like to spend a little time on it and ask your prayers and the courtesy of your attention. The incident that we have in the 12th chapter of Matthew is also recorded in Luke. I'd like to read it through for you. At that time, Jesus went on a Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungered and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, "Behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day." And they were right. The law is more complicated than just what we read here. There was an involvement with Pentecost and the wave offering. But the commandment that the disciples were violating was quite a strong one. It was more than just a parking ticket violation. But he said unto them, "Have ye not read what David did when he was an hungered, and they that were with him, how he entered into the house of God and did eat the shewbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests?" Or, example number two, "Have ye not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. But if ye had known what this meaneth, 'I will have mercy and not sacrifice,' ye would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day." When he was departed from thence, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days?" that they might accuse him. And he said unto them, "What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days." Then saith he to the man, "Stretch forth thine hand." And that's all he did. He just said, "Stretch forth thine hand." And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. When Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself from thence, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them all. Maybe that's far enough. Let's go back to the first, if you would. So much to learn from this old Bible is just endless. It's just endless. Pray for me tonight. Pray for our congregation, our souls. The Lord lead us in the paths of righteousness. It was a Sabbath day. That would be our Saturday. It was dedicated to God. Jesus and his disciples were passing through corn, we'd say barley, perhaps. Didn't have corn like we have in growing on stalks, 7 feet high, that land. And they were hungry. Isn't it something? These men were chosen of God to carry the gospel to the whole world. And yet they didn't have enough to eat. It was on Sabbath day and they didn't have enough to eat. And that's why they were hungry. I don't want to get my breakfast in the morning walking out through the wheat field, picking pieces off and trying to get enough to satisfy me. But the lesson is that it's possible to walk close to the Lord and still be in want at times. It's not guaranteed to be a rosy or an easy path. The Lord will get you enough to sustain you. He didn't guarantee enough to get you enough to get you fat all the time. So that's one lesson to be learned from this. And there had to have been, in order for this to, they're plucking the wheat or the barley and eating it, was a violation of the law. And these were all Jews, and they knew it was a violation of the law. So maybe it's a safe inference, conclusion, that they were very hungry. There's a point where you start feeling uncomfortable when you're hungry. Boy, this is the way I am. And then there's another point where if you don't do something about it, you're not going to be able to perform like you would otherwise. I mind Brother Gail Kelly was talking with me about fasting one time, and he said, I don't go all day without eating unless I just am fasting. Because he said, when I do toward evening time, I get a headache every day. Are you like that? Is he the only one? Well, these men knew that this was a violation of the law, but they were at the point where it was urgent to them to do something, apparently. And so they did. And then the Pharisees. And here's a conflict. But I don't care about the conflict. In a way, I don't care about the conflict. Only maybe in the sense of, we'll say it this way. I care about the Lord. I'm interested in how he reacted to the conflict. But if I could have my wishes about this, I would have asked the Pharisees to ask him a whole lot more questions than they did. Because I'd like to get all the answers from him that I could. I don't care so much about the conflict. I care about what Jesus said. He's laying down principles to guide our lives. And they're very important principles. It'd be nice if life came in a tidy little box with a ribbon tied around it. You open the ribbon and everything is just right in order in it. But life's not like that. It has perplexing things in it. And we need divine guidance to know how to deal with the perplexing things. And Jesus took advantage of this opportunity being challenged about the law when his disciples were violating it to expound on some of the conflicts that arise when we try to live life by rules and regulations. I live my whole life by rules and regulations. Don't you? Yes, I do. I brush my teeth every day because I've had enough experience with dentists to know that the bacteria is going to take advantage of me, and that's a rule. And I do that. It doesn't have anything to do with my soul, in a manner of speaking, but that's a very important thing to do. And my whole life is like that. Isn't yours? In one way or another. And if you have a very effective life, you've got to have some rules and regulations in it. Things crumble around you if you don't. When the Pharisees saw it, they raised an objection. Thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. But he said unto them, here is my justification. I know that's a law too. I could have stopped them. I could have said to them, Peter, John, God would be better pleased for us to lay right down here on the ground and starve till our bones are all that's left of us than he would be pleased for you to get that barley and eat it. So put it down. He could have said that. Or if you want to look at it from another standpoint, he could have created a table full of meat and bread right there in front of them. But he didn't do either one. He let them pick the barley. And he saw it. He knew it was happening. And the Pharisees, well, don't blame them too much. They were the keepers of the law. They were the guardians of the law. So that's what they did. They were right to ask about it. They Pharisaical practice, they carried it too far. They got upset about it. And they wanted to hurt the Lord. In a way, I don't care about that. I wasn't there, and I don't want to hurt the Lord, but I would like to know everything he had to say about this subject. So let's read what he had to say again. Have ye not read? You remember the story about David? David was running for his life from Saul. And he was faint with hunger. He was in imminent peril of losing his life. And he stopped by where the sacrifice was made, and all the bread there was available was a special bread that was dedicated to God. And he had no sword. There was only one sword in the building because that was a house of worship. That was a sword that had been Goliath's sword. And was it Abiathar? The high priest said, take that sword and go. And David ate the bread that was dedicated to God. Now, contrast that with Nadab and Abihu, the two sons of Aaron. Nadab and Abihu offered strange fire on the altar before the Lord. Well, that's a hard thing to distinguish, a fire, one fire from another. Friday, I kindled a fire out here in this little dump pile that we've got. And I used my igniter in two different places on the pile. Start one over here and one over here, and I stick back and looked at it, and I can't tell one from the other. They're just flames. The fire burned together until they mingled, and then I couldn't tell which part was which. Fire is fire. What difference did it make? It made a difference. When they offered strange fire, fire came out of the altar and killed them. That made a difference. Same kind of law. It had to do with natural things. This bread was dedicated to God. Remember Uzzah, when the ark was being carried back from where the Philistines had it on a cart behind two oxen. And the ark shook. And Uzzah put out his hand to steady it, and the scripture said the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah. And the Lord smote him, and he died there in his place. And because of that, David was afraid to carry the ark any farther. Stop right where it was, where there was a threshing floor, and so forth. So these regulations were important. That's all in the same category as a shewbread. But the difference is, David knew that it was shewbread. He didn't do it as a violation with disregard to the consecration. He's running for his life, and he was about to starve to death. It still had a price tag, if you want to think of it that way. When Saul found out what David had done, he caused that high priest and all the priests associated with him to lose their lives over that. That's pretty, so what was it, 120 people, I think, something like that, got them in a field somewhere and killed them all with a sword. And that's what it cost for them to give David the shewbread and Goliath's sword. And the pretext used against them was that it was treason to have armed David because he was God's anointed to take the kingdom. Now here we find the Lord. His disciples going through the field. It's more than just a Sabbath. This was an especially consecrated occasion having to do with the wave offering and the Pentecost offering. And the apostles or disciples, I'm sorry, violated that commandment. The Pharisees challenged the Lord about it. And Jesus referred them back to this example. He entered into the house of God, did eat the shewbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests. And then he offers a second example. The law is that no works to be done on the Sabbath day. But notwithstanding that, how can I illustrate it? Here's law A. Make it a line. No work on the Sabbath. Everybody understands that. But does that defile you in your soul? What does it do to your soul if you do work on the Sabbath? Well, think about it. Suppose you got hit on the head and you're unconscious for an extended period of time. And then you come to. Suppose you're on an island by yourself. You have no way to know after that has happened what day of the week it is. Which one's the Sabbath? So you take a guess. And it happens that you get Wednesday. And on Wednesday you say, well, I will do more work. Does that violate your soul because God set Saturday as a Sabbath? There is what I call primary doctrine and secondary doctrine described in the scriptures. Primary doctrine are things that absolutely will cause you to lose your soul. The scripture said, the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these. And he listed an awful catalog of things. And he said, I tell you again, as I've told you of time past, they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Get a knock on the head. Be unconscious for 3 weeks. When you come to and revive, it's impossible perhaps for you to tell which day is Saturday. But there would be something in you that tells you it's wrong to slip up on your neighbor while he's sleeping and stick a knife in his back. The law of murder is not written just in intelligent things. It's written in our hearts. It's a moral precept. You understand the difference? That's what we call primary doctrine. Secondary doctrine flows from primary doctrine. Secondary doctrine interprets how we use the primary doctrine. Did you understand what I mean by that? I not only won't kill you, I won't steal your land. And that causes me, if I'm by your land and you've got a no trespassing sign there on it, to recognize your right to own that land. And all of it flows from the same commandment having to do with respecting you as God's creation equally with myself. And it begins with a law not to murder. But the Lord said there is another law that directly crosses this law. On the Saturday, of all people, the priests who are bound in any other circumstance by the same law on the Saturday, they are commanded by the same Lord to do work in offering sacrifices. Take animals out and kill them and fulfill the rituals of the law. None of the people may assist them. They all just stand there and watch because to help them would be doing work. But the priests are required to do it. Now, if I were just giving you this as a philosophical discussion, you'd say that, I don't know whether I want to believe that or not, but it's in the Bible. That's what Jesus said. You'll see where it goes in a little bit. Have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. A little bit indirect still. He didn't just say, I am the Messiah. He didn't just say, I count myself equal with God, but he got right up close to it, didn't he? The Jews considered nothing in the world greater than the temple. The only thing they considered greater than the temple was God himself. Jesus knew that. And he said, there's one here that's greater than the temple. So I recognize he's saying, I'm greater than that is. But if ye had known what this meaneth, all this that I'm telling you, and this phrase, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would not have condemned the guiltless. Secondary doctrine can condemn the guiltless. Well, that's what the Lord said, wasn't it? You wouldn't have done that if you'd understood. I will have mercy and not sacrifice. For the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. Let's talk about the application of it. Now, I realize it's deep water, but it's important. Adam Clark says it this way. There are 4 ways, he says, in which positive laws may cease to bind or oblige. 4 times when positive law or secondary doctrine, I would say, should be disregarded. One of them is by the law of natural necessity. So Adam Clark. But I'll give you an illustration. Here in Newton County, if you own property, the law is you have the right to post signs, no trespassing signs on that property. And I can't just go on, and the law come and get me. You can call them the sheriff's department, and they'll come and get me. And I'll have penalties for doing that. That's the law. It's a necessary law. Aren't you glad it's that way? I'm glad it's that way. I wouldn't want to come home this evening and find somebody else and move sitting in my chair in my house and eating my dinner. I wouldn't want that to happen. But suppose that I'm take a wild notion to do something that I've never done and get in a canoe and I'm floating down Shoal Creek. And you're somewhere watching me. Maybe I don't even know you're there, but my canoe tips over and I get my foot caught under a log. Between you and me is a field with a no trespassing sign there. And you see that I'm drowning. What's the thing to do? Do you say, well, I can't go save him because there's a no trespassing sign there? Should people have no trespassing signs? Of course they should. And they're made for circumstances where they apply. But human life is more valuable than whatever damage you may do to somebody's property running across it to save somebody. You might make some muddy footprints right now in somebody's cornfield if you dash across it to save somebody drowning. And if you do, they can be taken care of. But if somebody drowns over there, their life can never be restored. So it's right. So said the Lord. So teaches this passage of Scripture. It's right. When there is a natural law of necessity to disregard the normal barriers. Brother Isaac Chandler preached on it this way one time. Intersections in our town have lights. Got three signals on them. Green, yellow, and red. We know what those mean. But there are times when those lights get out of order. And when that happens, there'll be an officer many times standing there. I've had this happen to me. Funeral procession coming through town. The light turns red, but the officer in the intersection has greater authority than the light signal does, and he'll wave you on through. You're not supposed to stop for the light when that happens. You regard the higher authority. Isn't that what the Lord said? Somebody greater is here. He put it in another place this way. Man was not made for the law, but the law was made for man. So the first of these four ways that Adam Clark says, secondary doctrine laws can cease to be, need to be obliged, is by the law of natural necessity. I'd like to offer an example of that. Many years ago, sat in a general minister's meeting. Folks were discussing women's hair. There are commandments in the Bible concerning women's hair. And it's important. God intended women to use their hair to show the difference. The Lord doesn't want women to dress like men, and He doesn't want their hair to look like men's hair does. That's a very beautiful thing. But I remember one of the black sisters stood, and she was near tears, as I recall, and she said, "What am I to do? This is what you folks are saying is a Bible requirement." And she said, "My hair won't grow." She said, "I can't get hair. Am I in violation of God's commandment because of the way He made me?" Here is the answer in the 12th chapter of Matthew. There are times when God in His world creates natural situations where one law is countered by another. That's what happened in the temple. Let me bring it to you this way. You have a minor child in your home. And the minor child becomes deathly ill. We believe in divine physical healing. I do. I stake my life on it. Neighbors call the law. The law of the land is that the authorities are required to intervene. That's the law. I've been through it enough to know, in no any jurisdiction, if the authorities are notified and you don't do something with your child, they're going to come and get it. They're going to get a court order if they have to, and they're going to take control. They are capable of judging you an unfit parent and putting your child in another home. We had this situation brought to us a number of years ago with a minister brother whose child was critically ill. The state had been called. The state had sent examiners out to check his child. The brother had staked his life on divine healing. He lived and died, trusting God for his body. God healed him at different times, and when his time came to leave this world, God didn't heal him and took him home to glory. His companion stayed faithfully by his side and underwent the same experience. God healed her at different times, and when the time came for her to leave this world, he didn't heal her and he took her home. That's as beautiful of a testimony as I know of. But when his child was sick, state authorities came into his home without his invitation and examined his child, determined that the child was sick, and they called him into court. And the child underwent medical treatment. He didn't have a choice about it. And then they gave him a choice. They said, we have determined, the best medical authorities we have determined that this child needs medical treatment. It's under court order. Now you have a choice. You can give this child the medicine that this doctor prescribes in your home, or we will take this child out of your home and put it under foster care. It's up to you. So he asked us about it. And we said, well, what's going to happen if it gets in a foster home? First of all, how's that child ever going to forgive you? What are they going to say when they get grown up and say, well, I didn't get to be raised with my brothers and sisters because God put my parents in a place where they couldn't accept my childhood? And then we said, what influences is your child going to be exposed to? You don't have a television in your home, but they're almost certainly going to go to one where there is. They may be a broken home. There is a law of natural necessity. The brother eventually solved his problem by finding another doctor who was able to give orders contrary to the one that the state had chosen. But so far as fighting them, I say it would be nice if life came in tidy little boxes with a ribbon around it and you just untie it and there's all the answers. But life's not always like that. Sometimes we get in, put in places. Who knows why the Lord allowed his apostles to be hungry, or disciples, I'm sorry, to be hungry, but they were. And it caused them to break one of these laws. You and I can be put in places where there is a law more important than the one that we are particularly trying to work under. 2 points. When we realize that, we are wise to understand the relation of these laws to each other. And that's what Jesus is laying down here in the 12th chapter of Matthew. The second point is when we see our brother caught in that kind of a place. If that minister brother was your pastor, would you think less of him because he was giving his child medicine in his home? Would it cause you to lose confidence in him if he's doing it under court order? Folks get in places where it's hard to give an answer by a set and pat means. And this is what the Lord is dealing with in this case. I've never had long hair a day in my life. But I've heard sisters say their hair is so long, it gives them a headache. And the Bible said long hair. I don't have the answers to all of that. But I do have this understanding from the Lord. There is a natural law of necessity. That is what the disciples acted under. And when they did, the Lord approved them for doing it. There's a difference in that in what Uzzah did, in what Nadab and Abihu did. When people do it because they're proud, when they rearrange their hair because it's the style of the world, that's a different thing. And God knows the heart from when they do it because it has become an intolerable burden to them to do it. I would not like to see a minister just shave his head bald and go bald, bullet head, all the time. I wouldn't like to see that. I'd like to think that God put hair on a man's head for a reason. He's best to dress it in a way that does not draw undue attention to himself. But Brother Leslie Busby did. Shaved his bald as an egg. He got some kind of affliction in his scalp. And he couldn't get rid of it. He was pastor at Guthrie at the time. And he shaved it so he could better manage the affliction that he had. I don't fault him for that. I know a brother who has a full beard, and I asked him about it one time. It's pretty forward of me, but I did. His face is scarred. He'd be so disfigured, people wouldn't want to look at him in public if they saw his face without the beard. I don't see anything improper in what he's doing, do you? Do you understand what we're talking about? And this is how life really is, folks. So, the first of these four means, Adam Clark said it, and I'm repeating it, that there are four ways in which secondary doctrine can cease to be requiring or binding. The second is when there is another law that is superior to the first. That's what happened in the case that Jesus was talking about. There was a law that nobody is to work on a Sabbath day. But there was another law given in Numbers and Leviticus that required the priest to work on the Sabbath day. And the second law is superior to the first law. So then the people would be in disobedience if they did the sacrificing, but the priest would be in disobedience if they did not do the sacrificing. Hasn't God the right to arrange his world like he wants to? Thirdly, by the law of charity and mercy. When he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And the Lord gave his answer. In another time, he was challenged about that by a woman who had a spirit of infirmity. And she could in no wise lift herself up. And she came to the synagogue on the Sabbath day. And the folks looked at him to see whether or not he would heal on the Sabbath. I don't know what his itinerary was. Would he have seen her on Monday or Friday? I don't know. He saw her on Saturday. That's what I know. That's what the Bible says. Maybe it was the only time they would have crossed paths. I think if I'd have been sick and been there, I'd get to Jesus any day I could. Wouldn't care what day of the week it was. Find him in the synagogue or down there being baptized or wherever he was if I could just get to him. She got there on the Sabbath day. And the Pharisees were watching to see what he's going to do. And he knew it. And he said, isn't it right? Isn't it mercy? This woman's been down all 30 years and more. To let her walk out of here still bowed on the same thing because it happens to be Saturday. And he spoke to her and said, arise. This man came to the Lord on the Sabbath day and his hand was withered. And the Lord said to him, stretch forth thine hand. And we might look at that and say, well, that's the problem. I can't stretch it forth. Heal me and then I'll stretch it forth. Faith never works that way, does it? The Lord said, stretch forth thine hand. And he did. And obedience is better than sacrifice, folks. We need to listen to the voice. And he stretched forth his hand and it was made whole. And listen, work would have been, by the definition of the law, if Jesus had touched him and tried to straighten it. But in this case, he did that sort of thing sometimes. Once he spit on the ground and made clay and put on a man's eyes, that would have been work. That would have violated the Sabbath teaching. But in this case, just by the word, and yet he set the example. Mercy. Mercy. Kindness. We did it here. We have a belief. In heaven worship service on Wednesday night. We teach folks. Maybe we should more. Lay aside your life for prayer meeting. Come and worship. It's important. The Lord does not want us to deliberately schedule ourselves so we do not have time every week to take time for worship service. But we had a tornado. And we dismissed our worship service on a Wednesday night out of mercy. We went out to some poor farmer's field and gathered up a tin that had blown off the top of his buildings. Remember that? To try to help him out? The Lord is pleased with that. Law of charity and mercy can supersede. And there is another case. I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. The same one who gave the law of what the Sabbath is, has a right to change the law. That might not be so important to us now, because we're in a New Testament dispensation. It surely was important to those folks then. Don't you know it was? You're not to eat food with unwashed hands. Now, I've been a carpenter nearly all my adult life, and most of the days that I was working, I ate with unwashed hands. We didn't have any water out there, and don't guess we ever even gave it a thought. Just eat. But to those folks, that would have been sin. And they'd lose your soul over it. And they would have put people out of the temple because of it. And so many other things. Eating pork. You like bacon? You like ham? But there was a time when folks would have considered it a sin. You lose your soul over it. Just eating a piece of bacon. That was the law. Now, catfish. Couldn't eat catfish because it has no scales. That was the law. Only God had the right to change it. God gave it, and God has the right to change it. That's something to be very careful with. I understand that. But it is in the Scriptures. This is what the Lord said. I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. And if ye had known what this meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath day. Greater than the Sabbath. We don't meet on Saturday. We meet on Sunday. And there's a reason for that. Those who have researched these things and wiser than I have said, in fact, Justin Martyr, who lived within 50 years of the time of Christ or less, wrote about it. And he said, the Jews kept the Sabbath day, which was Saturday. When a person became a Christian, the Jews disowned them. They would have a funeral service for you. They were considered no longer part of their family or their nation by converting and become a deadly enemy. The Apostle Paul's pre-conversion persecution of them is proof of that. Example of it in any case. The Christians, to show the difference, deliberately to show that we are not under nor acting by that Old Testament law, began to meet on the first day of the week, and they called it the Lord's Day. It was done in deliberate apposition to, deliberate moving away from, a statement that we are not under the old rigid law of commandments and ordinances and things of that sort. We're not under that. It's important, folks. Times change. People change. I can remember hearing the saints teach against white sidewall tires and insurance and Social Security and other things of the sort. They were right. They were right for their time. But times change. God clothed Adam and Eve in skins. But Jesus didn't wear skins that we have a record of. He wore a robe made of fibers, materials, vegetable matter, woven in one piece from the top to the bottom. I don't wear that. The commandment is that I be modest. Modesty, what is modest? The exposure of flesh doesn't change from time to time and culture to culture, but the manner of it does. Nobody had clothing like that. I didn't have any plastic back then. I couldn't make plastic buttons. I remember one of the old ministers talking about wearing of gold. And he said to my father, he said, I would never wear a belt with a gold-colored buckle on it because of what the Scripture says about wearing gold. I don't know if I've ever in my life had anything that was made of gold. If I did, I don't know it. But I can go to Walmart and buy a little trinket of some sort for 20 cents or a dollar that's gold colored. I remember being in a general minister's meeting discussion about that one time. Folks were talking about it, and I have objection in my heart. I have objection for people trying to imitate the wearing of gold. But being a carpenter, I stood and said to them, look at the doorknobs here in the chapel. Ours are not that way. We've got the antique ones. But everyone in that building, were the gold colored? Were they gold? No. And is it wrong? Once the money's taken out of it, it's just a color. Like any other color. We cannot hate. We cannot murder. We cannot lust and be innocent before God. That is true. That's absolute law. One of the distinctions is that God will take a life before He'll allow you and me to be put by somebody in a place where we have no choice but to hate, for our heart to change, something of that sort. But He won't take a life to protect secondary doctrine. I don't know a greater example than our Lord himself when he was stripped and nailed to the cross. I cannot think that that would apply to modesty. We would not want to see any one of us come to worship service next Sunday morning dressed like the Lord was when he hung on the cross. Those who comment on these things say that that was the reason why the women stood afar off, out of respect to the fact that the Lord wasn't wearing the clothes that he normally would have worn. You see, this is what the Lord's talking about in this 12th chapter of Matthew, and it has a lot to do with how we live our lives and the understanding we have. The important thing about it, when we're walking through the wheat field, we start to eat wheat out of the field. The important thing about it is that we're not doing it because we're greedy, that we're not doing it because we're proud, or any of those kind of things. If we do it out of law of natural necessity, that's a different situation. It's something that God has permitted. There's a dispensation and authority of the lawgiver. He has the right to change the rules. Nobody else does. He did so. He also has the right to make the rules. The Lord made the rules about the way we baptize. He made the rules about our ordinance service. I don't want to change them. I don't want to line up 60 cups here on the altar and pour a little bit of grape juice in every one of them so we won't all drink out of the same cup. I don't want to. It's not in my heart. I've heard people discuss it. I understand why they talk about it, but I don't want to. Because of the Bible saying that he took the cup and he passed it around. Does it sound crude to you? I want to drink out of the cup you drank out of. That's part of my fellowship with you. And I know people get sick, and I know we understand a lot more about bacteria than we did at the time of the disciples. But the Lord set that up. I don't want to change it. But he has the right. He had the right to make that, and he has the right to do what he wants to with it. And he set a commandment with it. This do, he said, till I come. So that settles it. That's the way it's got to be. One final point. Man stretched forth his hand. The Lord healed it with his word. Didn't violate the Sabbath. Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him, how they might destroy him. When the Lord knew it, but a lot of things he could have done, he confuted them. He could have called for a thunderstorm. He could have turned the people. The Lord had a chance one time to get a whole bunch of them stoned if he'd have wanted to. But instead, he just stooped and wrote on the ground. When he saw what they were doing, now these men, in wanting to take counsel against the Lord, how they might destroy him, they were sinning. That was a sin. They had murder in their hearts. They did it under the pretext of the law, but they had murder in their hearts. And the Lord knew that. If he stayed there, how could they have destroyed the Lord? I mean, how could they have done it? It was already prophesied before he came what his life would be and how he would die. He was a son of God. When God, 500 years before, says that he's going to die on a cross, how are you going to beat him to death with a stick? It was impossible. They couldn't have done it. They couldn't. How would that boat have sunk that the apostles were on with the Lord going across the Sea of Galilee? How would it happen? It just couldn't happen. It couldn't happen. The Lord knew that. But these men were sinning in what they were doing. Their heart was not turning toward the Lord. And he knew that staying there and conflicting with them would only make them sin more. And that would add to their condemnation at the judgment. So he, in mercy, rather than stirring them up, he looked beyond his feelings. He looked beyond winning a little emotional victory over these people. He had pity on their souls. Thank God. You understand it? And he withdrew so they wouldn't have to add further sin and condemnation to what they were doing. When Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself from thence, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them all. Wherever he went, he carried mercy with him. I'll stop now.